The BBC presents My Music. A radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Thank you very much. And once again, hello. Coming your way, yet again, My Music, with our usual four contestants, Ian Wallace and his partner, Dennis Norden, competing against John Amis and his partner, Frank Muir. It's familiar, but I can't put a name to it. We all say that from time to time, especially in this opening round of My Music. Ian Wallace, what show does this come from, and who composed it?
I recognise it, but it's exactly what you said, Steve. It's familiar.
Yes.
Can I put a name to it? It's American.
Yes.
And it's poetic.
Yes. It's launched on 10th Avenue.
Yeah, that's right. That's your partner, Dennis, who got it.
Yeah. Yes.
So Richard Rogers. Yes, Richard Rogers, one mark. Which show did it come from?
On Your Toes.
Yes.
On Your Toes.
Says Ian.
Fortunately, my partner is on his.
Yes, 1936 show. Incidentally, in the first London production at the Palace Theatre, one of the stars was Eddie Poehler. Do you remember him?
June Detective.
Yes, roughly once every month, some listener writes to me and says, why don't I revive Eddie Poehler's old radio series about twisted tunes?
Because you don't believe that one tune resembles another.
No, I don't. not as often as people claim, anyway. How true. Yes.
I think Vera Zorina was in that.
Zorina, yes. Jack Whiting and Leslie Henson.
I saw it. Mm.
Did you? Anyway, two marks to Ian to get us started. Dennis, whose band made this famous, and what's the title of the tune?
And Southern Area champions in the Latin division wearing 24 yards of tall. Why did ballroom dancers always have such ugly names? Nobody's ever worked that out. Have they? It was called Scruggs. Joe Loss's band.
Yes, Dancing Time for Dancers, yes.
And it's the Wheels Cha-Cha.
Yes. That's right. Two marks to you. John Amis, different kind of music. Whose homage to whom?
English folk song, Oliver Cromwell, which ends up, if you want any more, you can sing it yourself. And it's practically that. If you want any more, see good yourself are.
How a Greek, skewer way of answering.
Incidental music, yes. See good yourself are.
Yes, a homage march. Yes. See good yourself are, I've been told to pronounce it, with the stress on the first syllable.
I'm very sorry. I've been away so long.
See good yourself are, get you two marks. A tune that, incidentally, was very important, I believe, to listeners to Free Norway Radio during World War II. Frank, whose satire on whom?
It's artistry in rodents.
Yes, actually.
It's Three Blind Mice in the style of Stan Kenton.
That's right. Whose satire, do you know? Whose orchestra? For your second mark?
I can't help you there offhand, Steve.
No? No.
Yeah.
Well, the band leader had a hit record with this. He compared the whole proceedings, various versions like Glenn Miller and so on. This Kenton one he called Theme for a Trio of Sightless Rodents. So you and he had the same idea. It was John Dankworth's Experiments with Mice.
Ah, he was Johnny then.
He was Johnny Dankworth then, yes. One of his two great record hits of that period. One out of two. And we move on to the next round for which concerns composers and their works. Ian, this is from a newspaper review of an opera performance at Covent Garden. Just what kind of a wife do you have to be to secure the release of your political prisoner husband? A hard women's lib battler or a resolute woman who uses no more than guile and courage? It's what you might call a grabber, that review, isn't it? What was the critic discussing in an oblique kind of way?
A resolute woman, a husband.
Political prisoner husband.
Fidelio.
Yes, thing. Fidelio. And I don't know what he thought he was up to, but that's what the critic wrote in the Evening News.
Well, you've got to find something new to say, haven't you?
Yes, haven't you? Yes. And he did, and you get a mark. Dennis, which composer, and under what circumstances, wrote to another composer, "Great Chief, receive my tomahawk"?
My mind is racing through the many Red Indian composers. songs like Sweet Sue. tie another ribbon round the old teepee. And he, whoever he was, his name escapes me. He said what? What did he say?
Great Chief, receive my tomahawk. I must give you a mark for ingenuity, and because you couldn't have done it anyway. I guess the most endearing remark. It was what Berlioz said when exchanging conductor's batons with Mendelssohn. Great Chief, receive my tomahawk. He was writing, he enclosed it with a note that said that. And incidentally, the Paris Conservatoire has that baton still, the one that he sent.
Well, it just shows how wrong one... I was just going to suggest to you it might mean something to do with Hiawatha.
That's what I was... I was going on to one of those literary competitions that certain papers have, and they suggested new second lines to great, well-known poems and things. And what they did for Hiawatha, somebody had written, "On the shores of Gitche-Gumee, Hiawatha socked it to me."
John Amis, here again is a critic's description of an opera. Frederick Sharp plays a bemused and helpless impoverished aristocrat, Alexander Young, an impossibly debonair Ruritanian prince, and there is a final ensemble that holds its own against what was surely its model, the quintet in L'Heure Espagnole. Which opera was the subject of that review?
Alexander Young is a Ruritanian prince.
Frederick Sharp, an aristocrat.
Is that a contemporary number?
Is that F sharp major, F sharp minor? Major.
Major.
Well, makes a difference.
Contemporary opera, did you?
Yes, think? 1954, first performed at Aldborough. Didn't last long, only one act, only one course. One act, I'm sorry.
Could it be Punch and Judy?
No. I made a mistake and said only one course when I should have said only one act. Can't help any more, I think. Now, it was Lennox Barclay's comic opera, A Dinner Engagement, which contained those characters. Frank, Sir Arthur Bliss calls one of his compositions a rout, but it's not aggressive or warlike in style. What, in the sense he means, was a rout?
It's not a significant cough, that. It's just got a cold coming on. Rout was, it'd be more musical to call it a drum, which in fact is exactly the same thing. Or ridotto, although all three were the same things. All three are 18th century, yes. Or started out to be 18th century words for a party. But they split slightly with usage. And a drum became a sort of ladies party, usually with cards. And a ridotto became a huge sort of public affair, and a rout was a sort of gentleman's ball. You know, it's a family, large family.
Yes. It took on, I gather, from my books, a rather special significance. I think it's rather nice. A public dance or masquerade for middle-class enjoyment of upper-class pleasures. Well, put in one reference. As in Ranelagh or at Vauxhall. Here it is, just a moment or two from Arthur Bliss's Rout, just to hear it. Rout in the sense of revelry, perhaps.
I think Sir Arthur Bliss would say that's a really very good explanation. My piece from Frank Muir, I'm most grateful to have it.
How do you do it, John?
Yes. It's absolute Marvelous. Bliss, you know, my dear fellow, absolute bliss.
Bliss was it in that dawn to be alive, yeah. Some questions about the lower end of music now. Ian Wallace, are you a basso ostinato, and if not, why not?
Only about money.
Yes, ostinato.
Because ostinato it means, in fact, obstinate. Mm. I'm a basso comico, if anything, or a basso buffo. This is a form of, I suppose you would call it, persistent bass.
Yes.
A figure that is repeated in the bass.
Yes, that's right. Sometimes throughout a whole piece of music. It's a device that Purcell was very fond of. Dennis, this is from the lighter side of music, but the basso ostinato nonetheless. Can you give me the title and the composer who's also playing it here?
Actually very strong on this, but I think we had that. Would this be a 12-inch record? Is it actually a very long song?
No, not 12-inch, no.
It was on a Blue Note label.
What have you got in mind?
I've got in mind Honky Tonk Train
of
Blues.
Yes, I didn't think it was
12-inch. That was on a 12-inch label.
Well, because everybody's
it takes forever. And now, wait a minute. Right. That was Albert Ammons was the other one. That's Mead Lux Lewis.
Yes, Mead Lux Lewis. Mm. That's right. You got it. And
I really don't know very much about that type of music, but I'm told that's a classic of
this
kind, isn't
it? Very much so. Mead Lux Lewis, American Negro boogie-woogie pianist, made a record in 1922 of that and then completely vanished from everybody's ken. And a jazz impresario found him, rediscovered him after a rather dramatic chase, as it were, in 1936, found him washing cars in a Chicago garage and got him to re-record it. And that was the 1936 record we heard just then. Mead Lux Lewis, Honky Tonk Train Blues.
I wonder if I imagined that it was a 12, but I'm sure it was a larger record than most, you know, the equivalent of what you said.
So. John, we're still concerned very much with the bass end of music, and this is a bass singer, one whom I've honestly never appreciated, perhaps because I never saw him in person and came under his spell. Frank, I imagine, might call him Charlie Hairpin. What is his singing here, and who composed it? Do you know the composer? Have the stylistic tone of the composer?
Oh, I should say sort of Glink, somewhere between Glinker and Dago Mischke.
No, I can't go any further, can I? It's the Tripak from Songs and Dances of Death by, one more guess.
Mussorgsky,
all right, yes. Recorded in 1929 by Shelyapin, half a mark, I think, after that. Frank, what exactly is the function of a bass bar?
Oh, it's where the heavy fellows meet. They're on the back of the hall at Glyndebourne.
John's writing for you.
With a thing like a violin, the bridge takes the strain of the strings, not on the belly or the table of the violin, because that is supported. In fact, the two legs of the bridge are supported beneath. And one support is a peg, which either keeps the belly and the back together or keeps them apart, according to which way you think of these things. And the other one is a kind of long strake. So one leg of the bridge, as it were, is transmitting the vibrations to the back of the violin, and the other leg is transmitting it to the table. And that's called the bass bar.
Well, actually, you're right the first time. It's a place where the big fellas drink. Yes, you described it perfectly. It supports the belly of a violin or other string instrument, runs lengthwise along the grain of the wood at 90 degrees, in other words, to the sound. Boost! 2 marks to you. But, I notice, leading at the moment by 3.5 marks, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. We're going to hear now some performances, some slightly blemished performances, truth to tell. Ian, this is a chamber orchestra getting a little confused between two pieces. Which two pieces? Any ideas?
Well, there's... One of them is undoubtedly, oh, Jemima, look at your Uncle Tim.
Yes, otherwise known.
He's underwater, learning how to swim. First he does the breaststroke, then he does the side, and now he's underwater, swimming against the tide. Which I think was written by Gounod.
Yes. Only he called it...
He called it the Soldier's Chorus from Faust for some reason.
Did you recognise the other piece?
I would have had a... Would be prepared to put a modest 10p on Mozart.
Yes.
But no. I wouldn't like to...
Well, 1.5 out of 2. It was the Hafner Symphony, number 35 in D, K385. Dennis, I never tire of listening to that great stylist of the pianoforte, Jonathan Edwards. As you know, he's Paul Weston having a bit of fun. While you're trying to recall for 2 marks who wrote April in Paris... It says here on my card. Jonathan Edwards plays it with a special introduction to set the scene. Listen. What I like about him is the eternal optimist. He starts every run with the best of intentions, yeah, doesn't he? Yeah. And then comes a terrible cropper. Well, who wrote April in Paris? Words and music. Well,
we're on familiar ground, aren't we? Yes, it was written by Vernon Duke.
Yeah. And the lyrics?
And the lyrics were by E.Y. Harburg.
Yes. Yep.
The title was suggested by Dorothy Parker.
Was it?
Actually, yeah. Oh. Yeah. It really was one of those... Hey, that'd make a great song thing. She used a phrase about, it's just, you know, I feel like April, I feel so good, I feel like April in Paris. And he picked it up from there.
How marvellous. 2 marks to you. John Amis, even the greatest performers can hit an off day. I was at a concert not terribly long ago when a highly respected pianist played the Grieg piano concerto but had a bit of bad luck with the very first bars. If I can give you an impression of it myself, it was something like this. What had happened was that his hands had somehow lost the exact span of an octave, and when that happens, you are doomed. John, what in inches is the span of an octave? You've seen enough piano keyboards in your time. Have a guess. The span of an octave. They all measure exactly the same, all octaves.
I think about 5.5 to 6 inches.
Near enough, I think. It's 6.5 inches. I think it's near enough for 2 marks. Frank, I don't think we've ever heard this lady in my music, though goodness knows she's familiar elsewhere, and we've mentioned her. She is Florence Foster Jenkins.
Oh, yes.
The lady who used to hire Carnegie Hall for her recitals, and they were always a sellout once word had got around. Here she is. Frank, what was she singing, and what was the name of her faithful accompanist?
Steve Race.
I would have been honoured, actually.
She was singing Queen of the Night on a magic flute.
Yes, thank you.
It's all here, isn't it?
Derek, say it.
Roll credits. Cosmo Mush.
Moon.
John's written it, no. Cosme, actually, not Cosmo. Cosme McMoon.
Oh.
I think she was one of the great humorists, actually.
You know, once upon a time she had a car accident, and it clearly wasn't her fault. And the man who'd run into her was terrified she was going to sue him for a lot of money, but she wrote and sent him a letter saying, "Thank you very much. After the accident, I can get a higher E-flat in Alp than ever before."
Yes. So to the last round, and the singing from us, beginning with Dennis. Dennis, Tony Bennett sings two words. I'd like the next 13 words from you for two marks. Here
in
goes.
San Francisco.
I left
my heart.
Move over, Florence Foster. You really want me?
In San Francisco.
Oh, oh,
oh.
Oh,
yeah. Fran Francisco, it always sounds like when he's... High on a hill, it calls to me.
Get you two marks, yes.
Good.
To be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. John, you too will hear an introduction, this one by a full brass section plus some strings. Then, please, your entry. I noticed while you were singing, each line, just as you came to the high note, you brought your arm forward and placed the forefinger between your eyes above the nose. What was that for?
Well, I remember when I was trying to learn to sing that, my professor said, "You've got to think that high note, which goes nastily across the break of the normal voice. And you've got to go across that break. So you've got to think it into the forehead.
It's a think piece.
Do you ever hear Peter Ustinov's marvellous thing about when he was given three singing lessons in Rome? He said, "You've got to think of either the stomach, you've got to breathe of either the forehead." I forget where the other one was, but it's probably just as well.
Frank, there's one particular part of the Barber of Seville that every singer does slightly differently. We'd like to hear your version. A few bars of Robert Merrill to lead you in. So first we hear Mr. Merrill, and then we hear Mr. Muir.
Figaro, Figaro, Figaro,
Figaro,
Figaro,
Figaro,
Figaro,
Figaro,
Figaro,
Figaro.
I need an eighth. An eighth of a mark each, I think.
Figaro.
Get you two marks. Figaro. Right. Ian, your turn. A song, please, about a public servant of a kind. Armorially speaking, his banner on a crimson ground that's the clue, carries a somewhat mercenary message. And you should know it if no one does.
Yes. My ancestors, as I've been told, were highwaymen and pirates bold. Outlaws, rustlers, down the years, smugglers, cutthroats, buccaneers and rogues of like condition. For though a rollicking rover's life is not allowed me by my wife, it's my belief that a robber chief would envy my profession. You ask what it may be, sir, then hearken here to me, sir. Some talk of Alexander Bold, of Ajax, and of Hector, but I'm the one from whom they run in search of a protector. Policeman, soldier, humble clerk, or company director, all quake with fear when I appear. The income tax collector, collector, the income tax collector. Yes.
Well, I'm afraid we have to close the books at this point and report a victory by 3 marks for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Shryan.
You've been listening to My Music from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.